Hello, beautiful people. You are now listening to season 3 of the Platinum Rule podcast. Our priority is to give our listeners the most recent information about current events, public policy, activism, and much, much more. Third time's a charm. I think this episode is going to be one of our favorites. Welcome back. We're here, season 3, episode 3.
Yeah, it's a double look. Third episode of the third season. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Platinum Rule.
I'm Sophia, and that's Amari. We hope you've had such a great week. Happy Earth Day.
Yes, our little tribute to the Earth, our planet itself. Her.
She. A queen. We have not talked all week. How have you been?
I have been well. As you know, and as some of the listeners may know, I had the privilege and honor of going to Washington, D.C., for my first time ever. It was amazing.
How long were you there?
I was there for 4 nights, so a decent amount of time. Yeah, it's really amazing to reflect on everything that has happened in DC, especially seeing everything boarded up. I'm sure it's a very different experience when you have access to the grounds, and it's kind of just reminds you of what has happened in 2021, something I'm going to get into in a few moments. And also just shows, you know, on the latter, how inspiring DC is, how many amazing people have walked the same areas that I have, the same people who have seen the same things that I have. It was wonderful. And I'll never forget. And
how was it like going to all the touristy parts with COVID?
So everything was pretty open, but they do, like, if you go to restaurants, they do contact tracing, but all of the monuments were open. The only thing that I wanted to see was, the African American History Museum, which is closed until September, so I will be going back when it opens. It's a beautiful place, and I tell people, you go to New York to model, you go to LA to act, you go to DC for politics, and that's really what it is. It's the hub.
I'm happy you had so much fun, and I'm definitely going with you on your next trip. Okay, let's just get this episode started. We're here. Phone a friend. Be ready when we call you.
Hello, how are you? Why don't you tell everyone what you're doing right now?
Yeah, what's up, Pod? I'm getting my second dose of the vaccine.
Woo-woo.
At State Farm Stadium, baby.
We love to hear that.
It's a glorious day to be a member of the Phoenix community.
Absolutely. We have Molly on the phone here calling in from Arizona, and I have a question for you. We are celebrating Earth Day here on the Platinum Rule podcast, so I would like to know, what climate crisis do you feel needs the most attention right now?
Oh my gosh. I watched the documentary Seaspiracy on Netflix and learned all about the fishing industry, how people are trying to brand fishing as, like, sustainable hunting form, basically. In order to fish, you have to kill other fish. There's no such thing as sustainable fishing because you're just killing the environment.
Totally.
And I don't know, just the entire documentary was so eye-opening because I always am like, oh, as long as it's not, like, red meat and the American beef system, It's fine. Like, salmon is fine. But I found out that it's probably just as bad and really killing the ocean and, like, the entire world's ecosystem by, like, overfishing.
Now, you inspired me. I'm going to go watch Seaspiracy when one of these days when I'm in a good headspace.
Yeah, honestly, it's scary, so.
But for all the folks that are listening that have a strong spirit, please watch Seaspiracy. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, Seaspiracy.
All right. Thank you very much. What climate crisis do you feel needs the most attention right now?
You know, I would say just climate change in general, honestly. I think that there's a lot of reasons for people politicizing it, and that stigma needs to be brought down. I think that education is going to be a really good way to do that. I've always thought climate crisis has been, you know, the major supporter of all things environmental. So if we can knock that down, other things will kind of fall into place.
We love a good phone a friend segment.
We love to hear your guys' perspectives. One thing that I'm trying to focus on is sustainable fashion. I feel like a lot of people are just super quick to hop on trends with fast fashion. One thing that I'm trying to do is buy less of it, one, and two, focus on what I am buying. One tip that I got was that you should only buy an item if you see yourself wearing it at least 30 times. That makes it worth buying. And then also using apps to resell your items. I haven't really gone on there to buy, and being honest, I haven't really gone on there to sell either, but that's one thing I'm going to try to get better at. We did post some other ways to suggest how you can be more eco-friendly and think about Mother Nature with just everyday things. So make sure to check that out. I think it's time to move on.
Dun, 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 dun. Here we go. I always feel like I'm a journalist when I go through the headliners. Here's a couple quick positive COVID updates. One, Californians ages 16 years or older, are available to get the vaccine. Yay! This is probably the last time I'm going to say this, unless you guys want a weekly reminder that every single one of you that are listening are eligible. So please go out and get inoculated, you guys. We love you.
You're the only person on earth that I hear say inoculated.
Vocab queen.
Yes, we stan.
And second, all federal inmates will qualify for the vaccine in May. So that is also really great news. Moving on, President Biden has backtracked on his commitment to receive more refugees in the United States than Trump did during his presidency. This action made Democrats and advocates alike fight against the decision. The Biden administration then decided that they would expand that number, but have not disclosed by how much or what actions will be taken.
Accountability check. Your weekly reminder, we do not stan any politicians, and we hold everyone accountable, guys. They work for us.
Exactly. And the next thing on the agenda, these subjects are also related, so I just wanted to clarify some news regarding unaccompanied children at the border. I know a lot of people, including those who do not support the Biden administration, have a lot to say about this matter, and I think it's important to give you guys a quick update. Star Commonwealth, who's a nonprofit working with the federal government, has created an influx of shelters for migrant children in Michigan and Pennsylvania. They describe these shelters as quote-unquote beautiful cottages, which is a huge shift from the quote-unquote cages the children were forced into before. Their goal is to house over 16,000 children ages 5 to 17 until they connect with their family or are adopted, which is a lot more than, you know, what they've even done in the past 10 years, so kudos. Lastly, the U.S. Capitol police failure during the January 6th insurrection has finally been reported. It was stated that the policemen were told not to use certain weapons or actions, and were also not given certain equipment that they were trained to use to disperse dangerous crowds. And without getting too much into this topic, I want everyone to think about the stakes and why these officers were told by their supervisors to basically not act. And that's all for headliners.
That's all. Lots of jam-packed stuff. Just a reminder, we do not record the day we post the episode, but I'm sure lots will happen before Thursday. That's it for headliners. Thanks, Mars.
Of course. On to the next.
If you're in California, there are 30 million just like you using water for everyday life. Washing your clothes, watering your plants, cooking, showering, and just about every daily task. We are living in a modern-day luxury with water at our convenience.
California is the nation's largest food supplier, yet this drought was recently declared a drought disaster in over 50 counties.
We are talking groundwater, people, which is accessed through wells that pump water from underground. It's so critical to California's water supply. It provides drinking water, is a source for agricultural use, and helps sustain our natural environment.
So what exactly did we rely on in the past to supply a majority of our water that's now a scarcity?
We are nonetheless facing increasingly warm temperatures that compromise the snowpack we have traditionally relied on as our natural water storage system. Fires all across the state and hotter days year-round are not new news to any of us living here.
Thanks for clarifying that. And although there is a crisis, the key thing to remember is the difference between a drought emergency and a USDA disaster. Although a drought disaster sounds alarming, the classification allows for emergency federal loans to be extended to farmers all throughout California and other regions.
Yes, yes. So Governor Gavin Newsom, along with all the great work that the California Department of Water Resources led him to pledge and respond to this growing, not going anywhere water crisis. There are two acting groups here in response to this pledge by Gavin Newsom. On one side is the coalition of environmental groups saying, this is not enough. And then on the other hand, there are local agencies and federal government saying his plans are overboard on restrictions. So two really contradicting things.
And I know some of you may be asking why we even care about all of this. But consider global warming and its effects on all of us, not just in the future, but right now.
Is there any hope for California's water crisis? Should we be worried as California residents?
Yes.
We wanted to sit down and chat with a friend about water legislation and its direct impact for the next generation of farmers. Here is a true wine connoisseur, plant mom, SIP certified, and dear friend, Kayla Vasquez. Friend, please introduce yourself.
My name is Kayla Vasquez, and I was born and raised in Salinas, California, which is actually a very agriculturally active region of California. And I moved to the San Joaquin Valley in 2016 to pursue my degree in viticulture.
For those not aware, what is viticulture?
Viticulture is a very specific industry in agriculture that focuses on the growth of all grapes. And so that can be table grapes, raisins, or wine grapes, of course.
She's talking wine, y'all. Okay.
Sip, sip.
I reached out to you and I told you we were going to be starting season 3. And me and you just had these conversations while you were telling me about your new job. And So where are you working right now?
So currently I work for a luxury wine company that sources from the Central Coast out of Madera, California, which is somewhere I've actually had the opportunity to do a lot of anything across the board, from management to sales to marketing. And so I've had a really experiential time with that company. I also spent the last season, and for those without a ag background, a growing season tends to last 8 to 12 months, and that's entirely the whole year. So we did a project on some efficiencies for irrigation and overall stressors in vineyards. And that project was a very lengthy and extensive data research project.
Yeah, you were definitely getting your hands dirty, working long days. This girl was hard to reach, guys. But she was putting in the hours. I'm so glad you got that experience. What were those about?
Yeah, so as a graduate student, you're very lucky to be able to publish in your first year of your graduate program, let alone after you are a graduate student. So I fell into an opportunity with a couple professors. The first was for the Wine Business Journal, which is one of the most well-known platforms in ag and the wine industry that presents recent research findings or relevant topics and displays them to the public. And so my topic for that is going to be labor shortages in vineyards. And then I'm also working with a team of graduate students for ASEV, American Society of Enology and Viticulture. They're having their 72nd National Conference this upcoming year, and we'll be presenting on an ongoing research for virus infections and technology-driven solutions.
I am a proud friend.
I'm, so honored that you're here speaking with us. What are some good, well, I guess we'll start with good. What are some good policies in effect at your workplace that are a direct correlation with the water wars happening in California?
So when we start to talk about policy, when we're talking about any policy, when you're building a policy, there are so many parties involved, and all of those perspectives have to be considered. That's in order to have a policy that is appealed to all people in a positive manner, right? So there was an act that was put into place, and you can actually look up all policies on the website for California Department of Water Resources. But definitely one of the most discussed policies right now is SGMA. It's Sustainable Groundwater Act, which was signed into law as a bill, a three-bill legislative package by Jerry Brown.
Throwback to Jerry Brown.
Yeah, I know. So it's actually been in place since, I want to say 2014. And it actually has a over 20-year timeline on it. So this is not an act that by any means is going to end anytime soon. This is, we're in it for the long haul. It is a reformative act, and that is something that needs to be done in California as water supply continues to deplete. But it has imposed some obstacles for many parts of our lives, as 100% of drinking water comes from the ground in some areas. 77% of total ag water is coming from the ground. So, you know, we are responsible for restoring the quality of the land. And a lot of these policies are in place to do that. Where we find faults, and this is really the point of this entire response to your question, we're implementing policy without providing the tools to adapt to policy. That's the fault in why we're having these water problems, is we've considered all of the facts. We've done a really good job of doing that and putting in policies where they may be effective, but we're not going back to our people and providing them a way to navigate these new policies. And that's the biggest disconnect with any water policy and California farming as we know it today, and as well as drinking water.
And would you say that's because the policy itself didn't include resources for the community to participate in those changes, or there's just not enough manpower to, you know, get those certain acts done?
I think it has a lot to do with awareness. Not that the policy left something out, because like I addressed, you know, in the beginning, policy is a very detailed journey till you actually get to the policy. So all things are typically considered, and in this case, most things were considered, but it fell short in not having awareness for where you can get these resources. So it's not to say that the resources aren't available, but being able to, you know, how do you even figure out where to get and some of these resources is a difficulty for a lot of Californians.
Absolutely. And it's almost universal. We have so much access to entertainment and the internet and all of these distractions. But when it comes to life-changing decisions, people don't know that they're occurring. And something as important as this, you would think would be broadcasted universally, and it's not, with a laundry list of other things. So that's such a great point, and something that, you know, us and all of our listeners probably do, but a lot of people don't.
Like you said, this legislation is to go on for the next 20 years, and this is nothing new. We actually mentioned earlier in this episode that water wars in California are reason for some of the wealthiest and some of the poorest of downfalls and upstates of California and what water brings for California. I just want to get your thoughts on Newsom's pledge to fix California's water politics. He, from the moment took office, pledged that he wanted to bring priests to California's water wars.
I've actually done a lot of looking into the progress of California water policies in the last year specifically, and especially the initiatives from Gavin Newsom. From an environmental perspective, his pledges, they seem as though they can be really impactful, and I'm sure with proper implementation, we may see progressive differences over the duration of time. But that's not to say that water problems are as rigid as a bread knife. I think we can all agree today, with especially our generation and being the new, you know, face of not only politics, but, you know, all industries, we don't take pledging to be a notion that things are going to get done. Pledging to do something and actually doing something are two very separate things. And I think reformation starts with us. For once, it starts with the people. It starts with us making small changes in our lives every day and doing what we know how to do to make that difference. Sometimes you got to take matters into our own hands.
Mm-hmm. Amari is so big on grassroots movements. We just touched on movements in our last episode, but some of the biggest movements and ones that have made most impact start with just conversations like this.
Before we move on to solutions, I actually wanted to ask, what are kind of, just for you to explain to the audience, what are the biggest threats of not fixing these types of problems and not acting on these policies that were created?
There's a really good documentary, and I have the biggest encouragement for anybody who's interested in water related topics to go and watch it. I don't know what it's called, so I'll have to share with the girls and maybe they can somehow link it on. But it talks a lot about a town called Porterville that's just southeast California. And they talk about how many of the families in this town have to bathe with bottled water. To think that in such a well-developed country, in a well-developed state where we have a bullet train being built, there are people that are using bottled water to bathe. That is one of the impacts of not managing our California water supply. You see a lot of mom and pop farming institutions not be able to keep up with large companies. So, you know, your ancestors may have been farming this small plot of, for example, grapes, and now you have many corporations buying out water rights and you can't sustain your property any longer. So it's kind of twofold. And actually, I would say there's so many different elements that can be affected, but I think those are two really compelling pieces.
And just to take that one step further, and just to clarify, it is, well, are you saying it's like local governments not being aware of the situation or not acting on the situation, or there's not enough complaints, or there's not a resource to help them change what's going on and the dynamic?
To clarify, you know, who's at fault, I think we're all at fault. It's not just up to the, you know, local governments to make implementation. It's a matter of local governments working with our state governments, working with our federal governments, coming up with a solution that involves everyone. It's no one party that's at fault for these issues. In fact, it's coming from a million different angles. A lot of the problem with having a government that is trying to make a difference when it comes to water-related topics, it's a problem that you're not going to see progress with for a very long time. You're not going to see water wars go away within the next few years, even if we start going in the right direction. You're not going to see the positive outcome for maybe 10 years. And that's because it takes time to actually get people moving along with these policies and the reflection of what these policies are doing. That's a hard thing for people to get, is the policy doesn't reflect itself for quite some time.
Right. So it's not just systemically, it's culturally as well that both come to play with these issues. Got it.
Just taking a step back from talking about the policies, implementing forward thinking, I see a true benefit in technology-driven solutions to repair and grow with modern farming. And that's where I am applying my part. So like I said, it takes all of us to make, you know, those subtle differences. This is my part. By using artificial intelligence to achieve precision agriculture as an industry, we can focus on not only sustainability, but overall productivity. And isn't that always the goal, is to be productive?
Absolutely. That was beautifully, beautifully said. Sustainability-wise and individual and household-wise, do you have any tips or any suggestions that us Californians can implement into our daily lives?
I know, you know, we always say, turn the water off when you're not using it. And those things, they sound...
2-minute showers.
Yeah, exactly. And those things, they sound so redundant. And it's, you know, like, ugh, how much could I really be saving? You know, it who cares how much it is? It's something, right? On the day-to-day basis, I mean, watering your lawns, you know, knowing an optimal time to water your lawns. Put some effort into it. Google it. Figure out
nighttime,
what is,
ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly.
My dad
there
taught
you
me
go.
That.
Yeah, and you know, finding optimal ways to use water that can be big or small. It's everybody has a part, and if it's two droplets of water, it's two droplets of water.
Do you see any others from your research? Have you seen any other states within the United States or any other nations around the world that are facing similar problems? And have you seen them come up with any solutions to these types of problems?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is a global issue,
right,
by every means. I mean, India is increasing in population, exponentially decreasing in total water supply, and water is the core of every living being. So you can't have a continually increasing population and continually decreasing water supply, because not only do you need this water supply to sustain natural life, but you need it to grow crops that will feed your people, especially somewhere like India that has such a high population that becomes very difficult. And that's why countries that are experiencing water issues, they are adapting by using water-resistant crops instead of crops that require a lot of water. So, for example, you'll see in the San Joaquin Valley, pistachios pop up very sporadically in different places these days, and that's because of the efficiency in using those crops. So that is a way that these countries are adapting. And another area that they're also exploring is technology-driven solutions as well. And that's something that I don't want to say we're behind in California, because we've definitely had some amazing findings come out of this state and, you know, United States altogether. But it seems that a lot of other countries are willing to invest more in these solutions.
So I'm not sure if this is totally left field for your expertise, but I feel like you have, you know, a much better understanding than I do. Does the promise of ocean water seem to be an option when you're talking about technology growth, or are those two completely separate incubators that have to be tackled in different ways?
Essentially, can we use seawater as our water supply?
Right, because that's like everyone's question. Like, we have water, so why can't we just use the ocean?
No.
And then it's like, because there's salt,
no.
And then you have to filter
seawater
it, and then you can't use it for drinking.
Very, very high salinity water composition. So salinity is defined by the salt composition in water. There is a lot of water cleaning and recycling that would have to be done to use that water, and that would take a lot of energy. And when I say energy, I mean there would be a machine involved that would emit some sort of carbon. So, you know, then you go into another realm of problems. You see this also pop up in vineyards trying to use winery wastewater back into the vineyard. It becomes very problematic because there's also high salinity in that recycled water. So the idea of essentially recycling water kind of brings you to this point of low quality water. And low quality water is just as bad as no water.
I'm so glad that you hit on that, because that's something that I would have never thought of, and something that I feel like you probably hear a lot when people, you know, who don't know anything about water say, we have water on our planet, why can't we drink it? Why can't we use it? Why can't we just take a pump and filter it through?
Save the turtle if you don't take away their home.
Right? Absolutely. Do you have any closing thoughts?
Water is interesting to some, yes, environmentalists, but all of the topics surrounding water are far more interesting. A lot of people have the notion that water does not affect them, but it affects us indirectly and directly every day, whether you realize it or not. So take a look at the things around you and make a difference in any way you know how to.
Exactly. With so many other things, we really, truly take water for granted. And I hope that this episode and your dialogue helps people channel that empathy for our environment because it's so important.
As always, it's been so nice talking to you, Kayla. We're going to end this here. Happy Earth Day. Hope you guys got to get outside today, enjoy some sun, do something fun. Amari, take us out.
And with that, we just wanted to say thank you guys for returning and tuning in.
As we'd like to emphasize, we're just here to spark something for everyday people who do everyday things that have the magic to make differences everywhere.
With that being said, if you're feeling in the mood, leave us a review and follow us on Instagram if you don't already at Platinum Rule Podcast.
Bye.